2025 is off to a fast start for Indiana and U.S. agriculture. Let's talk about it on Hoosier Ag this week. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer from Indiana's most listened to farm radio network, Hoosier Ag Today. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll take a look back at how the grain markets performed in 2024 and why one market analyst sees good signs ahead for 2025. Tar spot was a big story in 2024. How do you plan to tackle it this year? And if you're in the market for a new truck for the farm this year, we'll tell you about one designed by farmers for farmers and how you can get behind the wheel of one. Market analysis from this past week is on the way, and Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin's Indiana Farm Forecast is coming up as he monitors this winter storm that's on the move this weekend. That's on the way in less than 10 minutes. Let's begin in Washington, D.C., where a new Congress was sworn in Friday, but it's the same old work that needs to get done for farm country. New leaders on the congressional ag committees and in the White House mean new opportunities for advocacy. Sam Kiefer, Vice President of Public Policy for Farm Bureau, says the four leaders of the committees have a wealth of experience.
The House Ag Committee chairman is Glenn G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania. He's well-established. New ranking committee member Angie Craig from Minnesota. New, but not inexperienced. On the Senate side, John Bozeman from Arkansas takes over as the committee chairman. He's been serving as the leading Republican for a while. And joining him from the other side of the aisle is Senator Amy Klobuchar from the Democrats. Again, new to her post, not new to Congress, not new to the Ag Committee.
Kiefer knows what farmers believe should be priority numero uno.
They need to get back to the business of doing a farm bill. We've been kicking the can down the road for the better part of 2 years. Congress also has to deal with expiring tax provisions before the end of 2025. Not to mention there's a number of regulatory oversight opportunities for members of Congress. They also need to figure out the budget, and the current budget only goes until March.
About 2 miles down the road from the U.S. Capitol on Pennsylvania Avenue, President Donald Trump will be taking up residence again on January 20th.
We've been working with the Trump transition since Election Day, and frankly, we've been working with the Trump campaign prior to the election, letting them know where farmers and ranchers are on policy issues and what their wants and needs might be. As we look to the new Congress, we've been hitting the ground for the last several months, getting ready to focus on the tax issues, continue the conversation on Farm Bill, and make sure that the regulatory oversight opportunities get some attention paid to them.
For updates on these issues and more, be sure to keep an eye on our website, of course, HoosierAgToday.com, but also on FB.org throughout 2025. Now, speaking of President-elect Donald Trump, he's been threatening to reassert U.S. control over the Panama Canal. FarmDoc says he accused Panama of charging excessive rates to use the passage, which drew a sharp rebuke from Panama's president. Speaking to supporters earlier this week in Arizona, Trump also said he wouldn't let the canal fall into the wrong hands, warning of potential Chinese influence on the passage. And according to the Associated Press, Panama celebrated the 25th anniversary of the U.S. handover of the canal on Tuesday. They also observed a moment of silence for the recently deceased President Jimmy Carter, who reached the deal for the handover in 1999. On his Truth Social, Trump continues to post about the Panama Canal after his initial post back on December 21st that said a lot about the Panama Canal, finishing with, "To the officials of Panama, please be guided accordingly," saying that if they don't follow the initial intent of the Panama Canal handover, that he will, quote, "demand that the Panama Canal be returned to us in full and without question." Read more about that at HoosierAgToday.com. More now on transportation. The ag industry is bracing for another potential strike among workers at the East and Gulf Coast ports. C.J. Miller reports how that could have a major impact on Indiana's pork and beef producers.
For every week of a potential shutdown, it would be a loss in excess of $100 million just on beef and pork exports.
And that's Dan Hallstrom, president and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Back in October, the union, which represents the workers at ports along the East and Gulf Coasts, went on strike for 3 days. The U.S. Maritime Alliance reached a tentative agreement with the union, which temporarily extended their labor agreement. But that contract extension is set to expire January 15th. Hallstrom says another work stoppage could have significant impacts on meat exports if another agreement isn't reached by that January 15th deadline.
On the pork side, 45% of our waterborne exports go off the east or Gulf Coast. And on the beef side, 30% of our waterborne exports originate from either the Gulf or the East Coast ports.
He says the impasse is already impacting the ag industry.
We already have exporters, I'm sure, diverting cargo or planning to divert cargo. Ocean carriers are anticipating that. So we already have surcharges in place between now and the 15th of January. And a lot of our cargo is refrigerated. So there's also the very real possibility that prior to January 15th, a lot of these ports may stop accepting refrigerated cargo just because of the uncertainty around the contract.
Hallstrom adds that a possible strike would hurt the United States and our reputation as a reliable supplier of pork and beef to the rest of the world. I'm C.J. Miller.
And I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. You're listening to Hoosier Ag This Week. And more farm news is coming up. Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin's Indiana Farm Forecast on the way as well. Right now, time to check in on the markets. And for that, we welcome Andy Eubank.
Thanks, Eric. It was a sharp sell-off, profit-taking going into the weekend and the final day of a holiday-shortened week of trade. We'll have the settlements coming up here on the weekend show, but first, market analysis. And I secured that from Brian Basting of Advanced Trading in the middle of the session. In your words, Brian, a pretty good run for the markets up until Friday, but then on Friday, quite a sell-off. Profit-taking going into the weekend, I would assume. What else was at play, if anything?
Well, thanks for having me, Andy. Yeah, I think so. It has been a real good run for both corn and beans. Corn made a six-month high here earlier this week, Andy, and I think the market has seen quite a bit of farmer movement, or at least significant farmer movement, as producers reward this rally, both corn and beans, maybe a bit more on corn. But regardless, some hedging came into play here, well over $4 cash in many locations throughout the country, and I think producers just take note of that to kick off the year. So I think the South American weather is kind of a mixed bag. We're really looking at some record production estimates coming out of Brazil for beans, 175 million tons or more compared to 153 last year. So you're looking at anywhere from a 10 to 15% increase there. Might be keeping a lid on beans. On the flip side, Argentina is going to be hot and dry. And there's early corn in Argentina that's at risk there that had given the corn market a bit of a boost. But as you said, I think some profit taking before the weekend here. Anytime you get that much of a rally on the table, or speculators are more inclined to take a little money off the table, as it were, risk off out of a weekend, particularly in a weather market time period. So, but I think it's going to be a big week next week with the January 10th USDA reports coming up, and that'll give us some guidance throughout the winter.
Export sales were out one day delayed Friday morning. That was a disappointing report. Talk about those numbers and what kind of an impact it had on the sell-off.
We've seen quite impressive corn numbers, Andy, for several weeks leading up to that. So it may have just been a factor where most of the buying had taken place prior to the Christmas holiday, obviously, and many buyers just take downtime themselves, of course, and so that may have contributed to that. Higher prices may have discouraged a few end users. As I mentioned, we had seen this corn market rally to a six-month high. Maybe they decided to take a breather here and then see if a pullback would develop here.
Brian Basting there with Advanced Trading. Brian's number is 309-664-2314. Friday settlements now. First in the corn market, March, 450 and three quarters, a loss of 8 3/4. 9 cents down on the May and July. May, 458 and a quarter. July goes to 461 and a quarter. Double-digit losses in both beans and wheat. Jan beans, 18.5 cents lower, 981. March, 991 3/4. Quarters down 20 and a quarter. May, 21 and a quarter off at 10.03 and a quarter. 16.5 cents down on the March and May wheat contracts. 5.29 and a quarter for March. May, 5.41. Meats down 2. February live cattle, 194.05. That contract did go 45 cents higher. Deferreds down. And February lean hogs, $80.77 down 37. I'm Andy Eubank with the Friday Farm Market Review. Much more still to come on Hoosier Ag Today's Hoosier Ag This Week.
We have what you want, when you want it, where you want it. At Hoosier Ag Today, we have up-to-the-minute markets, weather, and farm news ready for you 24/7. You can find it on your local radio station, the Hoosier Ag Today website, and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app, as well as your favorite social media channel. All because we want to give you what you want, when you want it, where you want it. Hoosier Ag Today. Tune in or log on.
A winter storm making life a little interesting as we move through this weekend. And then the Arctic wants to join the party for next week. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Indiana Farm Forecast Weekend Edition. The market is not really caring about the weather too much unless it's South America, but the news media has taken a keen interest in local weather. As we've seen all sorts of snowmageddon, the sky is falling, we're all going to die, projections of what this snowstorm is going to do that's coming through starting overnight tonight, going through tomorrow, and lingering into very early on Monday. We're going to try and set the record straight here, but I'll tell you, there's still enough time for a track to deviate and change, and it could make all the difference. So if you're looking for very specific snow totals out of this forecast this morning, you're going to be disappointed. I'm not going to give them to you, but let's kind of talk through how this thing works through. First of all, today, not too shabby. I think we end up with a mix of clouds and sunshine across a good chunk of the state. Clouds increasing late this afternoon into this evening. Low pressure kicks out of the central plains, out of Oklahoma, late this afternoon into this evening. Tracks across Arkansas and the Missouri line, that area, and then ending up in western Tennessee by the time we get into tomorrow morning. That is a little bit farther south than some of the tracks were earlier this week, but I still think the southern track aligns pretty close to what we were talking about going back into yesterday here on Hoosier Ag Today. Again, a south track means that we are looking at all snow for the Hoosier State. I'm not concerned about rain mixing in at all anywhere, but snow totals can be vastly different. I still like very minor snow totals in the north over the northern third of the state. Could be all the way down to US 24, but safely, let's say State Road 14 in that area there. And then we've got 1 to 4 inches of snow that go all the way down to a line from, you know, Crawfordsville, Kokomo, Portland, give or take. And then we see the heaviest of snows the south of that line down to about US 50 or even the Ohio River. So if you're in central and southern Indiana, that's where the biggest snow totals are going to be as we move through the overnight tonight and especially through most of the day tomorrow into Monday. Now, some solutions are slowing the system a little bit, so it may not start as fast, but the result will still be the same. Snow is coming. Cold Arctic air blasts in behind this. We don't see a lot of precipitation for the rest of next week, but very cold air in here, especially from midweek forward. That means lake effect cloud cover is going to be something we need to talk about, and some flurries and maybe even some snow showers up north. But otherwise, nothing well organized coming through the state except for the cold air, and that lingers into the following week, the week of the Fort Wayne Farm Show. Nice cold week to be indoors at the Coliseum. I'm Ryan Martin.
Micro Essentials S10 from the Mosaic Company delivers uniform nutrient distribution. Every single granule contains nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. Micro Essentials has superior nutrient distribution when compared to MAP or DAP blends. This means your crop does not have to search for those nutrients, improving nutrient uptake. Choose a superior phosphorus fertilizer with Micro Essentials. Contact your local ag retailer to learn more.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. And if you could choose just one word to describe the grain markets during 2024, that word would likely be volatile.
2024 is going to go down as a year that had its ups and downs.
And that's Carl Setzer with Consus Ag Consulting. Even though the year ended more down than up, if you take the nearby contracts for corn, wheat, and soybeans on the last trading day of 2023 and compare those to the last trading day of 2024, you'll find that corn has fallen by 12.75 cents a bushel. Wheat is down by 76.5 cents a bushel. But the biggest drop has been in soybeans, which has fallen by $2.95 a bushel. Setzer says at one point, grain prices were on track to end even lower.
It actually subsided a little bit as we got through the first part of the holiday season. And then in the year end, we saw the big volatility come back in with heavy fund positioning and funds really adding to their corn complex throughout December, taking it to over 200,000 contracts to the long side. Then all of a sudden we get to the end of the month and the funds played catch up in the soy complex. And that's what gave us our big gains going into the New Year's break.
Overall, Setzer says there are signs that point to a little bit of optimism for grain prices as we start off 2025.
Our market gradually came back to these levels, and it really didn't slow down our demand at all. We will see demand slow a little bit as we move into 2025, but it seasonally does. That's not going to come as a shock. The thing is, we are well ahead of where we typically are for sales and for domestic demand, and that's starting to edge our market higher. I'm not saying we won't see corrections, but the market is definitely telling us that it is comfortable at today's levels, which is a good sign moving forward.
You can hear much more from Carl Setzer at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, by now, you may have heard that President-elect Trump has nominated Brooke Rollins of Texas to serve as his U.S. Ag Secretary and Stephen Vaden of Tennessee to become the Deputy Secretary of Agriculture.
I'm very pleased with these two choices, and I think they'll serve agriculture not only well, but very well.
That's Ted McKinney, who serves as CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. McKinney previously served as USDA Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs during Trump's first administration. McKinney says that Rollins is a great choice to lead USDA.
I think perhaps the most important thing we in agriculture should look at, and clearly that the president looked at, was to get someone that he trusts completely, that has his ear, and for us in ag, that the vice versa is true, that he has her trust and so forth. And I think that is clearly the case. I mean, her role most recently in the last Trump administration as chair of the Domestic Policy Council, that is no slouch position. Let me just tell you, that is an important role.
He also points to her lifelong connections with the ag industry.
Most people may not have heard her much. She's not been in the ag industry solely for her career, but at Texas A&M, her degree is in ag development. And then through her time going through law school, leading a not-for-profit, then at the White House, she dealt with ag issues, just not as publicly as perhaps you and I would see, not on the headlines every day. So the fact that she's got those ag chops and has the trust of the president and vice versa is great by me.
McKinney also has high praise for Stephen Vaden, whom he worked with directly at USDA.
He was the general counsel at USDA, a position that doesn't always get a lot of notoriety. But the man is a smart cookie. Let me tell you, he knows the law. That was affirmed when he was selected to be the judge of the International Trade Court. He comes from a farm in Tennessee, I believe, Vanderbilt grad. So I think he has a very good and broad perspective that is going to support Brooke Rollins very well.
Both Rollins and Vaden will need to be confirmed by the U.S. Senate before assuming their new roles at USDA. The department has 29 agencies, over 106,000 federal employees, and a budget of more than $437 billion. Well, tar spot was found in all 92 of Indiana's counties in 2024, and Eric Pfeiffer reports how it moved in early and aggressively in southern Indiana.
And I think that caught a lot of people off guard.
That's Madison Wozniak, Technical Service Manager for FMC.
You know, historically we're choosing products based on southern rust performance. We're not really thinking heavily about tar spot because generally they saw it move in, you know, late in September. At that point, not influencing grain yield significantly. They didn't think they were going to have to manage tar spot the same way guys in the northern part of the state did. And I think that's going to influence decision making and 2025.
Wozniak says if you're looking for the right fungicide to help battle tar spot, FMC has what you're looking for.
We just launched a product in 2024, a Dastrio fungicide. It's a foliar fungicide. Three mode of actions are represented, and it's going to be strong against tar spot, southern rust, northern corn leaf blight, and gray leaf spot. So all of the diseases that could blight your farm operation, we've got you covered.
Of course, fungicide timing is everything.
If we can make that application around R2, R3, it seems to be that it's paying off. So one of the tools that you could employ if you're worried about, well, there are other diseases that move in earlier, maybe earlier than we expect to see the tar spot. There are other management strategies that we can employ, such as a Xyway fungicide that can help hold off some of those early onset diseases like gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight, also managing our stalk and crown diseases.
Hear more in the Full Hat interview with FMC's Wozniak at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
Coming up, you'll hear from Chuck Connor, who's not only a native of Benton County, Indiana, he's also a national ag leader and serves as president and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. Connor discusses the need to find solutions for ag labor in 2025. Also, Gary Truitt profiles a truck that's made by farmers for farmers. That story and much more coming your way next. Don't go anywhere. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and this is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
I think for us, this location is working. And all of the infrastructure is here. It's the ethanol business kind of built it up,
That's right?
And we can take advantage of that. Now, BioBond, we don't make everything that we formulate and create. We use toll makers, and there's plenty of that. So we have an asset-light business model. So we focus on the technology, the formulation, but also creating product solutions that the customers want. And I think there's a lot of capacity already built here, and you guys have helped. Dan Dahls has helped a lot in connecting us with the big players here that are already supplying corn and soy-based product.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back, and thanks for joining us on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. Former President Jimmy Carter died last weekend. He was 100 years old. Our country's 39th president, Carter started his long and storied life as a farm boy on his daddy's peanut farm in Georgia.
The barn was the center of our attention on the farm because all of our work was focused there.
James Earl Buddy Carter Jr., the eldest of four children, was born October 1st, 1924 in Plains, Georgia, a farming town about 150 miles south of Atlanta. The late president fondly remembered his boyhood days on the farm in his audio memoirs preserved by the Plains Historical Preservation Trust.
We caught the mules and horses early in the morning, took them to the field, hooked to wagons and plows. That's where we brought them back at night for feed and for watering.
Jimmy Carter was one of just seven modern-day farmer presidents, and 16 in total. He rose through the ranks to become a U.S. naval officer, Georgia governor, and the first president from the Deep South since 1837. But he never forgot his humble beginnings.
When Daddy threshed oats and wheat, we had a threshing machine just behind the barn, and we would have a big pile of loose hay. We used to get a running start in the loft of the barn and leap out of the window and land on the soft pile of hay.
Carter ran that farm after his father died in 1953 and went on to become a successful agribusinessman, politician, and later a Nobel Prize-winning humanitarian. While not always seen as a friend of farmers, as during his grain embargo of the Soviet Union, President Jimmy Carter will always be remembered as the humble peanut farmer from Georgia. If a new truck for the farm is in the plans for 2025, now you can get one that's been designed by farmers. Gary Truitt has more details.
It's called the Ag Wagon, and as Pat Driscoll explains, it's a truck built especially for farmers. 14 farmers and ranchers collaborated with engineers from Fox Factory, who's doing the manufacturing on this truck for us, for almost a year. And through that, those engineers found out what farmers and ranchers needed from their truck. From these farmer recommendations, a base model was designed, and from that, farmers can customize each vehicle to meet their operations' specific needs.
Now we've got a truck out there, Gary, that has a customized agriculture suspension in it, has agricultural type lighting because the work doesn't stop at dark. It's got two-way radio systems built into it with programmable radio, so you can program it to your farm's two-way radio system. I mean, there's so many pieces of this truck that you won't find anywhere else. It is truly an agriculture truck with tractor-like capabilities. There are upgrades from that base ag wagon, so you can customize it to its purpose on your specific operation, or if you have more than one ag wagon, you can have each one of them built a little different for different purposes.
Driscoll says major truck manufacturers are getting behind the program, with production of Ford ag wagons currently underway.
We'll be able to go to production with Rams in January, and then it'll be in Q2 before we can get to the General Motors products, but that's coming.
Certified ag dealers are the only dealers authorized to sell the ag wagon. For a list of certified ag dealers in your area, go to agwagon.com. I'm Gary Truitt.
With all the issues facing agriculture today, ag labor continues to rank at or near the top of the list.
The leaders of all of my membership, all the farmer-owned cooperatives across the country, labor and the availability of a workforce is their number one issue.
That's Chuck Connor, Benton County native and current president and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. Connor served as USDA Deputy Secretary and Acting Secretary in the George W. Bush administration. He says ag labor isn't a new issue. In fact, it's an issue that's been around since he was a staffer on the Senate Ag Committee.
I worked on the last ag labor bill that passed in 1986. This has been four decades ago.
In addressing ag labor concerns, many want reform to the H-2A guest worker program. But Connor says that doesn't solve problems in every ag industry.
Can't bring in legal foreign workers to work in our dairy operations. That is considered full-time work. Our H-2A program is banned from providing anything for year-round work in that regard.
Some organizations are looking to get creative in how they attract talent, like NCFC member Keystone Cooperative. They've implemented their SEED program for graduating FFA members. It's a two-year developmental program where they're hired full-time at Keystone to explore different aspects of the business before choosing what area interests them most. Keystone's Lindsay Sankey explains some of the benefits.
We're paying for their CDLs, their applicator's license, port quality assurance training, propane safety training. They essentially start earning money the first day that they show up in the SEED program, and we take care of all that financial burden.
It's really a pretty interesting program. You spend time in each of their diversified business units, including grain, energy, agronomy, swine and animal nutrition, and also their corporate office. Again, it's a two-year employment commitment, but during that time, you receive all full-time benefits and pay. The deadline to apply is January 31st. Visit keystonecoop.com/careers for more info. That does it for this edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. Thanks for joining us. We're back again next weekend. Same hat time, same hat channel. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.